What's up, fight fans, and welcome back to another episode of the KO Breakdown. I'm your host, the fight analyst, Garrett Kerman, and with me, as always, is my man, Joe Danger himself, Jesse Hobson. What's up, man? How's it going?
It's going good, man. I did some Halloween shopping, so I'm happy to report
that we
finalized the set.
Yes. And
it's Jumbo from Killer Clowns from Outer Space. I didn't have to pay the eBay prices. It was $19, which is kind of where I wanted to be. My stores didn't get those last year. We got the other two, obviously, and for the first few weeks, I was able to find those everywhere, but I was really pleased to finally find a Jumbo. I think next time, it'll probably be hanging up right there.
Nice. I can't wait for it. I'm pretty sure our viewers would be looking forward to that as well. But UFC 279 on tap, headlined, Nate Diaz is back in action to take on the human wrecking machine that is Khamzat Chimaev. That's it's like a death wish in itself. Nate Diaz said he didn't even want this fight, but here he is taking the fight. He's a gangster, as we all know, possibly his last fight ever in the octagon. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to this whole fight card as a whole.
Yeah, I heard some people. I went to a card show last week in Conroe, Texas. If anyone's in the Houston area that wants to hit up a card show, feel free to hit me up and I will direct you. There's another one coming up in October. But it was pretty cool. Khamzat was like the talk of the show. Anyone that had UFC cards, that's, who was buying, who was selling. Obviously, Diaz is always going to be one of those names that everyone knows. But I think a lot of people are hoping for kind of like, Diaz of yesteryear, Diaz of the McGregor days, Diaz of, you could even argue the Leon Edwards fight. Well, maybe the fifth round. I'm just not sure if we're going to see it. Obviously, we'll get to it here in a bit. But it's just an odd fight. For me, like, it's going to be difficult. Passing of the torch, if you will. Yeah, it's a strange one, Mr. Grinch.
Yeah, I know. It's not a fight that I really wanted for Nate, especially on his last fight of his contract. I wanted a fun fight, a fight that would be back and forth. Ultimately, he would have lost in pretty much any fight that was, kind of thrown his way. But it's definitely a fight, I wanted a fun fight for him. We might not ever see Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz 3 if
Lost you on the mic. Yeah, we might not ever see a trilogy of that fight, but at the same time, considering he might open up his own, he's talking about opening up his own company. I mean, who knows? Maybe McGregor says, F UFC and starts doing his own thing, and that's where part three is held. I'm not sure if I would love that, honestly. I think that the place where that needs to happen is Cowboy Stadium, get the most bodies to take on the biggest fight of all time, which arguably this could be. But it looks like Garrett's back. So yeah, bad. What do you think about that?
He was talking about Nate Diaz doing his own fight promotion, and that's gonna be good. I know he's gonna put on some good fights there, but ultimately I don't think Nate Diaz and Conor, if they fight again, it has to be in the UFC octagon. And I don't think it will ever happen unless it's in the UFC octagon, because of the fact that they both want to get paid for that fight, and it's arguably it would be one of the biggest rubber matches in the sport. So unfortunately, it's not going to happen unless it's inside the octagon. But
I wouldn't want to see it any other way, just because of the production. Bellator is like mid, PFL's mid. I mean, and they just don't really hold like a stick or a candle to UFC. It's just not the same.
No. I mean, Bellator doesn't even have marketing, let alone any type of value in terms of their production. I mean, these guys, you don't even know that, there's a Bellator fight on this weekend? Oh, wait, there's a PFL fight on this weekend?
Yeah, true. Yeah. Also, whenever you unplugged your mic, now I think we're taking your audio from your, not your actual mic unit. I think you're pulling in audio from your system.
Thank you, sir.
I mean, it still sounds good, but we want to get the best audio we can if possible.
I think we're better now.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. Yeah, I mean, I like those, but the pacing with Bellator is horrible.
Yes, PFL is the PFL has the worst pacing, and then and the worst fights on top of it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was gonna say. Well, not only that, I mean, obviously we can jump into the card soon, but with PFL, the issue with PFL is half the fights get canceled because they don't like they
can't,
line them up.
Because you can't fight three times in like a 3 month span. It's very hard to be, you know, fit, ready to go, and injury free. You know what I mean? I don't like their format. I wish they would just go to a regular card by card format, build divisions, and then give out $1 million that way instead of these seasons BS and blah 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 blah. I know we can go on for hours about talking about it, but yeah, I mean, they could get better. Bellator could get better, but at the end of the day, UFC is king. It will always be king. There's nothing else that really can compete, and nothing else will compete. But
there's one thing that competes, and it's Mayweather. But speaking of that, man, what do you think about the Jake Paul fight?
I don't know. Right now, Anderson Silva is a sizable favorite, which is, you know, I kind of get it because he's more experienced, but at the end of the day, he's 48 years old. He's got to go, you know, he's got to fight 8 rounds, you know, almost 30 minutes. Even though Jake is not as skilled as him, he's definitely going to have the cardio advantage. He's probably going to have the power advantage as well. So I want to put it past Jake Paul squeaking out a sweaty decision because of the fact that he also runs the promotion. So,
Yeah, I'm going to put money on Paul probably after this weekend. So anyway, let's get right into the card with the first welterweight matchup.
We have a fight between Darian Weeks and Johan Lennasse. I think that's how you say it. Right now, the line is set at -125 for Weeks to come back on Johan Lennasse, +105, all the way up to +110. Who do you got?
You know, this card has its ups and downs, and you know, we're starting off with a decent fight here. We have, you know, two decent opponents, two good guys. You know, the UFC has not done Weeks any favors with his previous matchups.
And he one is another, and not one either.
Yeah.
What the fuck? What is he going to do?
I would actually argue that this is probably going to be more difficult than the Ian Garry fight. Like Gary, Brian Barberena, and I do think that Weeks is a good fighter. I think that he is a good competitive fight for anybody. But, you know, he gets these mashups that just aren't favorable for him. You know, I believe Johan, he just moves enough to get to the scorecards. And when we do get to the scorecards, I think that he wins. I think he pushes the pace and puts himself, you know, in good positions. The only issue is he has not the best fight IQ, and that could cost him, but I ultimately think that he's going to find the win probably after a 15-minute win via activity. I think he's just more active than Darian Weeks, and because of which I think the judges are just going to ultimately say his name or pick him to win anyway. Whatever, you know what I'm saying.
I think if Johan wins, he's going to win by early knockout. I kind of don't want it to go late in the fight because we've seen him kind of cardio dump after that first round. He lit up Gabe Green early and then had his cardio dump. And I kind of expect the same. I know Weeks got a good chin on him, but I think Johan can put him away. He's going to be the bigger of the two. He's going to be the longer of the two. He's got the punching power. It's just going to come down to whether or not he doesn't have a cardio dump. If he doesn't have a cardio dump, I think he wins his fight. But ultimately, I think it gets him out of there inside two rounds. He's going to come forward. He's going to throw some heavy, heavy hands, a ton of pressure, and he's going to look to headhunt and get him out of there. That's why I think this is a tough matchup, tougher than the Ian Garry fight. Considering because of Garry is a guy that's looking to stay on the outside lit and then counter you, whereas Lennasse is just he's looking to bring the action to you and trying to knock your fucking head off. So I think Lennasse is going to do that and get him out of there inside two rounds.
Yeah, you know, I kind of went back and forth as far as like the KO or the decision. And I just, I think that honestly, I think it really comes to down to Weeks. If he can avoid those big bombs, like you said, he does have a good chin, which, I mean, was pretty apparent in the Ian Garry fight. It really just depends on that ultimately, because Johan has to find the perfect punch to get him out, but at the end of the day, I just think Johan's going to get his hand raised. So I think Johan decision, you think Johan KO.
I think he wins by knockout. I mean, you know, four of his last five wins have come by knockout. Three of those four have come in the first round as well. Flying knee, punches, body punches. He's got different types of variations of how he's getting people out there. And he's finding good competition, like Evan Cutts, Justin Burlinson. You know, so he's getting some good work in there, and we'll see. But I like him as a dog here, slight dog.
I'm actually surprised he's a dog. Like, I feel like
money's been pouring in on him. So he opened at +115 and now he's down to +105. So
yeah, that line is going to flip.
I think so too. They got to get it in now. All right, moving on. We got a fight in the women's strawweight division between Elise Reed and Melissa Martinez. Right now, Martinez -160, the comeback on Reed +140. Who do you got?
Yeah, this one is low level.
As low level as you get.
Low level. Yeah. Decent competition for Martinez, but like it or not, you know, this is definitely a step up. I personally think she finds another KO, but I wouldn't be surprised if Reed wins by decision either. If she gets control, she could sell it to the judges, and that's a huge possibility because Martinez is not really, you know, all that great. I do think Martinez connects and puts her out, though. Reed does get knocked out, and Martinez knocks people out. Simple as that. Like, that's I wouldn't run to the betting window, though. This one just has bullshit written all over it, so just be careful with your money.
Yeah, first and foremost, I like to tell this on every one of these type of fights. No way am I placing my hard-earned money on either one of these two. Let's get that right out of there. All right, Martinez, she's coming in at 7-0, undefeated prospect. She used to fight at Combate Global. She's coming off about a 3-year layoff. It's going to be interesting to see what holes, you know, she's been progressing in and getting better in. But I know she's been doing a lot of kickboxing fights outside of MMA during that time off. That's not the area that really concerns me. Her concerns me is her grappling. Her grappling is absolutely atrocious. She can't defend takedowns. She can't defend on the mat. She's a fish out of water off her back. Granted, she's got a Elise Reed in front of her who doesn't have much grappling at all in her arsenal. Reed's going to fight Martinez's fight. It's going to be at range, where I think Martinez probably, you know, is the better striker of the two. Definitely has more power. And Reed definitely gets touched up. So ultimately, if I had a side, I'd probably take Martinez to win via decision. But like I said, absolutely not betting this fight whatsoever.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
Yeah, let's keep it moving. Next up, we got a fight in the bantamweight division between Chad and Helliger and Alatang Hali. Right now, Alatang is -175 to come back on, and Helliger +150. Who do you got?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this one, and I'm pretty sure the last time that Helly fought, I'm pretty sure I said he doesn't have any power.
Right. And
yeah, and then he crowed like 47 seconds or something. Like it was Chrome. But still. Yeah, you know, Chad Ellinger puts himself in bad positions, and I can almost assure you that Helly will take advantage of this. His record is a bit deceiving. You know, he fought Song Yadong to a decision back in 2013, and he looked decent. It was decent enough to avoid, you know, those Song Yadong blows, but that was before he was hooked up with Faber. I think Ellinger, you know, I think he's on the ground. I think he makes a mistake. And I think I think Helly ultimately finds a submission. If you get a chance, watch that fight though with Helly and Song Yudong. It's on YouTube. It was actually a really good fight. It was fun. It was kind of fun to see him. What that's 9 years ago. Holy shit, I'm getting old. But yeah, it was pretty cool. Pretty cool to see, you know, how far these guys have come.
Oh yeah, I mean, since that fight, I mean, he's only grown immensely. Like you said, didn't get knocked out. He also went, you know, 15 minutes with Casey Kenney too. I mean, yeah. He's fought some legit competition. He beat Danah Bakari. He beat Ryan Benoit. He knocked Kevin Kroom's lights unconscious. He would have beaten Gustavo Lopez if that dumbass wouldn't fucking stop holding the damn cage for an hour and a half. I'm like, God damn it, man. You're up two rounds, possibly a third round, and then you drop a point. I'm like, you idiot. But anyways, in terms of this matchup, I am not high on Anhelinger whatsoever. He's fought, for the most part, low-level competition. Other than, you know, his contender series fight against the guy that came over from ONE Championship. The only reason why he won that fight is because Gafarov essentially had a cardio dump after round one. He was absolutely dominating him on the mat in round one, and then just had a massive cardio dump, and then that was pretty much all she wrote. Jesse Strader also gave Anhelinger troubles. Anhelinger has been taken down 9 times in just 2 fights, so there's a clear path of victory for Alating. In this one, he's actually a decent grappler. He's landed numerous takedowns in his time. You know, he's averaging 1.73 takedowns per 15 minutes, which is pretty good considering he's got a 33% takedown offense. So that means he's attempting upwards of 4 to 5 takedowns per 15 minutes. So, which is great because of the fact that Anhelinger doesn't defend takedowns. But he doesn't even need to take it there, honestly, because he could just knock his head off on the feet, which I believe he's going to be able to do. So I'm taking Alating Helly in this matchup. She get it done. And we keep it moving. Keep that shit moving.
Yeah, I just think there's more paths to victory for him as well. So I know that in the chat, Forrest is asking, so don't pick Chad Ellinger.
Yes. Do not pick Chad Anhelinger. I'm not the only one that's taking Alating Helly, so just letting you know.
By the way, no, we have not talked. There's only one fight that we talked about prior to this show because I like to get Garrett's like candid ideas, or you know, I like to come to this as blind as possible. So I know one fight that he's picking. So far, I mean, we've been on the same page, but based on the tape, I think Helly's the play.
Yeah, like you said, power advantage. He's got the grappling advantage. He's got the durability. I just don't see where Anhelinger is really going to do anything. He's going to have to knock some sense into him. And the last person that knocked him out was Kai Asakura, who is a KO artist over in Ryzen, and that was in the last like I don't know, 5 or 6 years. He's the only one in like 10 or 11 fights. So, and I don't think Anhelinger is going to be the one to do it.
If you are going to bet Chad, though, I would go ahead and do it now because money is coming in on him. So, I mean, your line's going to be better now than it probably will come fight time.
Money's starting to come back in on Helly.
Well, shit. Okay. Yeah. Never mind. Ignore me.
So I'm going to go bet on Alating Helly. You know, probably right after this, so before this money keeps going away from me. All right, let's keep it moving. We got a fight in the women's featherweight division between Norma Dumont and Danielle Wolf. Right now, Dumont -410 to come back on Wolf +330. Wow, what do you got?
Yeah, this we did start talking about this right before we went live. This is just a really weird matchup. Like, why, number one, why would Wolf agree to such a step? This is a huge step up in competition, and you know, why would the UFC throw her to the dogs like that? Obviously, we know why. You know, this is the only women featherweight fight that is available. while I don't really think either girl is all that great, I do believe that Dumont is the better of the two. However, considering that both girls stand and trade, if it goes to a decision, I do think Wolf is worth a stab. Plus 400 ain't bad. And I don't really see either girl finding the finish. If there is a finish, it probably will come by Wolf. But otherwise, I think that this goes to a decision.
First and foremost,
don't bet on this fight.
Don't bet on this fight unless you're taking the dog. Yeah. And me personally, not taking the dog. Nora Dumont should never, ever, ever be a minus 410 favorite against any other person that's breathing on this planet. No, she should not. Even against Danielle Wolf. Danielle Wolf is not good. She's only 1-0. I believe she was a professional boxer before switching to MMA, which is why she's getting the limelight. She didn't look good in her contender series fight. She's now had about 2 to 3 years of layoff.
Barely won.
I mean, technically she should have lost. She's now 38 years old, so she's way past her prime. So we really don't know what we're gonna get from her. We don't know if she's even gotten better in the last 2 to 3 years. We really don't know much about what she's gonna bring to the table. We know what Dumont's gonna bring to the table. She's gonna come forward. She's gonna try to get in your face. She's just kind of, you know, use the clinch, get up against the fence, just try to make it gritty. But at distance, I think she's at a pretty big disadvantage. As long as Wolf just throws her hands, she's got much more power than Dumont. She's much more technical on the feet as well than Dumont. Dumont leaves her head out there as she's marching forward sometimes, and she could get clipped. I don't want to place money on either one of these two, especially at minus 410. I feel like if you're going to place money, it's got to be on Danielle Wolf. Because I think she's a better athlete as well. So yeah, if I'm betting on this fight, I would take Danielle Wolf, but fuck this fight. Let's keep it moving.
Hold on. So one thing I do want to mention is there are two, Dumont has two submission wins, and you know, initially, like, so you're like, okay, well maybe she knows a little bit about BJJ. So I went and watched those fights. They are as low level could be. These girls, they literally put themselves in a position to be choked. And, you know, I always talk about the fights where we're fighting in someone's basement or like a cave. This is like rec center video. And yeah,
Black and white.
Yeah, I mean, no, but
VHS, but, I mean, black and white.
Yeah, it's definitely off of like a camcorder, but they fall into guard and then like basically just give their neck. So I wouldn't be really worried about the submission threat. So I really think that Wolf is worth the stab. I know that Garrett's suggesting not betting on this fight, but you know, if your lineups need a huge dog, you know, I might throw Wolf in there, because at least she's going to get you points as far as significant strikes.
That is true. All right, let's keep it moving. We got a fight in the heavyweight division between Chris Barnett and Jake Collier. Right now, Collier minus 425 to come back. Barnett plus 340. Jesus Christ. All right, who do you got in this one?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Chris Barnett. I think that it's like really dumb that he's even in the UFC. It's like a sideshow. Like, I feel like I have to pay a quarter to enter the tent and watch this type of fight. You know, Collier, he's found his rhythm in the heavyweight division, so at least we have that. But, you know, and he sticks to a game plan. So, like, I enjoy that. And I'm glad that he's kind of turned his career around. You know, initially when he came back as a heavyweight, I know we won a lot of money. But it was sad. It was super, super sad, because you're just like, dude, this guy is literally showing up for a paycheck, you know? Like,
and just... on top of it, he didn't even take his shirt off.
Yeah,
like he's like, I'm just this is what you get.
Yeah, I'm a big boy too, man. But if I'm in the UFC, I'm taking my you're getting what you paid for. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, I really just don't see this. I think Collier just in a fight at range and box him up. Like, I mean, it's very possible that they take it to the ground and Collier finds a sub. I think Barnett just might be too fat, like, to get sub, maybe. I'm not really sure what the hell to even think about this. I like Collier by decision just because I mean, it's going to be sloppy, sloppier as we go along. But yeah, I don't know. The only way that this won't go to a decision is if Barnett tries to find a way out or just flat out gives up, which he has done in the past. So
yeah. I agree with that. I think Collier is definitely the pick. I think he's the better athlete. I think he's a better fighter. He's much bigger, much longer. He's better technically as well. I think he's faster too, no less. And he should have a ton of success just fighting at range. I like the fight to go to a decision at plus 120. I think that's pretty good. You know, Collier to win via decision as well as plus 140, plus 150. That's also very good. Those are pretty much the only two plays I really would pick out of this.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not looking forward to this.
Oh, never mind. That's why it's like short and sweet. We got Forrest riding with Barnett experience and athleticism.
I think Collier has the more experience. I mean, yeah, I mean, Barnett can do the dipsy doodle, kick his leg in the air, but I mean, it's weird. I mean, what's it gonna do if it doesn't connect? He's just gonna tire himself out,
right? I'm just hoping this shit goes the distance, because that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, it's like a chubby Maurice Green,
pretty much. All right, let's keep it moving. Next fight up is in the middleweight division between Jamie Pickett and Dennis Tulalin. Yeah. Right now, Pickett minus 130 to come back on Tulalin plus 110. Who do you got?
Yeah, you know, obviously Pickett has faced decent competition, but I mean, Dennis was literally thrown in the deep end, you know, with Alice Kebab, is that how you say it?
Kizriev, yeah.
Yeah, I know. But looking at his record, I mean, he tends to lose every time he takes a step up in competition, every single time. So, like, he was winning. Then he faced someone that was decent, and he lost. You know, with Pickett, he wins fights. He should, but loses some here and there, too. I think this fight really comes down to what version of Pickett we get. You know, if he shows up, he wins. If he remains cool, calm, and calculated, he wins. This is really his fight to lose. The guy is athletic, kind of like the last fight. He's just more athletic than Dennis. And I like Pickett here, but I'm really not confident. You know, it is very possible that Dennis wins a close decision, but I like Pickett by KO. I think he's just the more athletic. I think he's the bigger, stronger, faster. You know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I definitely don't want anything to do with this fight.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. Definitely not betting on this fight. There's a lot of these fights I do not want to bet on because they're such iffy fights with such fighters that you just don't want to lay your money on. Let's just be honest. Do you really want to bet on either one of these two and feel really confident with your money on Jamie Pickett or Dennis Tulalin? No.
If I had to, I feel like I would be more comfortable with my money with Jamie.
Yeah, I agree, because we've seen more of him. He's fought the better competition. We've seen some, you know, some shining brightness of, you know, good
decency.
Yeah, good out of him. But, you know, not enough for me to be like, yeah, let's go place like a stack on Jamie Pickett. Yeah,
No, thank you.
I don't want anything to do with that. But as far as this matchup goes, I'd probably have to side with Jamie Pickett. Like I said, bigger, stronger, faster, more athletic. I think he's just all around the better fighter. He's got some power. He's got some decent grappling. We know that Dennis can be taken down. And I do think Pickett can go that way and just kind of control him and win via unanimous decision. But I really don't want anything to do with this fight. I think Dennis Tulalin's gonna look like shit and probably get canned after this fight.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it feels like at this point, Pickett, since jumping from Tuesday Night Contender to the actual big show, it seems like he's kind of like a gatekeeper. And, you know, when they want a mediocre guy to lose, they kind of send him to Pickett, and then ultimately they get cut.
Yeah, so. They did that to, what's his name, from the middleweight division. But anyways, Staropoli. Yeah, did that to Staropoli.
Staropoli. Well, and, you know, and a lot of people, I mean, he was the favorite. So, yeah. I don't know, Pickett. I don't know. It's crazy how this guy turned his career around. You know, I'm happy for him. So hopefully he gets to see another fight, which he probably should.
All right, let's keep it moving. Next fight up is in a catch weight of 220 pounds between Houghton Almeida and Anton Turkle.
The pleasure man,
Anton. Okay, we'll go with Anton. But anyways, right now, the line is set at minus 660 for Almeida and the comeback on Anton, plus 490 all the way up to plus 525. Who do you got?
The pleasure man is back, baby. And yeah, he almost got beat in his contender series fight against a scrub. You remember that one? It was interesting.
I don't think he almost got beat.
In round one, he slowly took over. He was getting...
I don't know. He just wasn't doing much early on, you know?
He was getting pieced up in round one.
I mean, he outlanded his opponent 13-6 in round one.
Well, that's just not how I remember it.
And he had 4 takedowns in 4.5 minutes of control time.
Maybe I'm thinking of like the first 2 minutes then, because initially I didn't have a bet on him, but at the same time I was like, damn, this pleasure man is getting beat.
Was not impressive. He had to go 11 takedowns to get the job done.
Yeah, and even then, it's just like, dude, like the guy that is normally knocking people out in round one couldn't get the job done against the guy that should have been knocked out, you know, and it seems like they kind of just put him on this card, you know, just to almost kind of like for him to lose.
They needed someone because I think Almeida was supposed to fight Abdurakhimov. And then he got pulled from the car, Shamil. I forgot. I think it was an injury. So now Anton stepped in on short notice.
Yeah, I remember when this was announced, but I guess I didn't put it together who Jelton Almeida was, like, until I actually looked at the photos. Like, holy shit, that's that big ass motherfucker that beats the shit out of people. Yeah, I think that Anton, the pleasure man, comes in, and I think he goes wild. I think he overextends. I think he looks stupid. And I think that it's just going to be two behemoths, going at it. And I think that Anton gets caught. I think that Jelton is going to find him, knock him down, take him to the ground, and find the sub probably in round one. You know, this Anton guy, he's massive. So it's going to look impressive. But we all know that it's really not all that impressive based on his performance on Tuesday Night Contender.
I mean, you also have to take it the fact that Almeida is actually a lot more experienced than Anton as well. He's got double the amount of experience against much better competition, no less. And then this guy's also grappling with elite grapplers too. I mean, he went against Caio Bahio in a grappling and submission circus, last year. He out-grappled Nasruddinov and submitted him. So, you know, this guy's elite. Yeah. Anton's not going to go in there and just ragdoll him like he did his contender series opponent. And this is at a catch weight of 220 pounds because, you know, Anton couldn't make it down to 205. So he's giving up a ton of size to Almeida, because he's a guy that fights a heavyweight and light heavyweight, so he's giving up a ton of size. Ultimately, you know, this is a setup fight. Almeida should probably go in there, make quick work, get him out of there probably within the first 3 or 4 minutes. I mean, he's not on the same level.
Yeah,
and you cannot train for a guy like Almeida who matches your strength and just beat him on short notice.
Yeah, I just don't see it going any other way. Like, round one finish. Like, that's...
Yeah, I mean, he even beats him on the feet, too. Like, he could probably crack him on the feet because this dude just has, like, I don't know, he's got, like, a scarecrow-type mentality. He's super upright, throws and wings punches. He's not very technical at all. He's got some good grappling, so he could make, you know, he could win some fights in the UFC, but this is definitely not one of those fights that he could win.
Yeah. Well, from what I remember too, on Tuesday, he was like, I mean, him and his dance partner, they took up most of the octagon. So, I mean, once these two guys get in there, it's going to look weird. And then once Anton gets beat in this devastating fashion, it's just going to look like that much more of Almeida being like a world beater. It's going to look that much more impressive just because, like, they're both pretty big boys.
Right. No, I agree. I definitely agree there. All right, let's keep moving. Next fight up is our featured fight on the prelims in the featherweight division between Hakeem Duwadu and Julian Arosa. Right now, the line set at -215 for Duwadu, the comeback on Juicy J, Julian Arosa, +172 all the way up to +185. Who do you got?
Yeah, I already know who you got. So yes. I will give you the, like, I guess, response to that. You know, I think that this fight is a lot closer than the odds indicate. I know you don't. I think that Julian's style may present some issues for Duwadu. Also, the blueprint is out for how to beat him. I'm not saying that Arosa is going to take him down and wrestle him to a decision, but if he can keep him at range, you know, and Duwadu, I'm also afraid he's going to fall in love with the kicks. He does do this from time to time. He falls in love with the kicks.
Why is that a problem, though?
It's not a problem, but if it goes to a decision, it might be a problem. So I think we could very well see another split decision. And I am going to pick Arosa by decision just because I think the judges are going to be favoring the volume. And I know what you're going to say. Yeah, I know.
They throw the same amount of volume.
But Arosa is going to be headhunting.
You can throw, right? You can throw 20 punches a minute. What if you don't land a single fucking strike?
I hear you, but that's the thing.
If you look at the statistics, right? Duwadu is by far the best defensive striker in the entire division, bar none. Not even close. He absorbs the least amount of strikes out of anybody. He is elite when it comes to striking. Elite. There's no one better than him in the division when it comes to technical striking. There's no one more credentialed in the striking at 145 pounds. Next to him is Giga Chikadze, and that's it. Those two are on another level in terms of striking credentials. Credentials outside of MMA, inside their sports of kickboxing, Muay Thai, whatever. This dude is a credentialed Muay Thai world champion, and he's by far the best striker Julian Arosa has ever faced, by far. And this is the dude that got knocked the fuck out by who? Choi. Who's got knocked the fuck out by who? Julio Arce. This guy gets knocked out like it's his fucking job. He's got knocked out numerous times. He gets outstruck by numerous fighters. He got outstruck by fucking Steven Peterson for God's Christ. You know how crazy that is? You're talking about a guy that Steven Peterson beat the dog shit out of him in that fight. I mean, it was to a point where he almost finished him, you know? So now he's going against a guy that's as skilled as Duwadu. Like,
I think Duwadu is the better fighter. The thing is that if it goes to decision, I think that there is a good chance that Arosa wins the split.
What decision other than Duwadu getting wrestle fucked by Movsar Ivilev, did he lose? What decision did he lose?
I know. You made that point earlier that
he doesn't lose decisions because he throws the same amount of volume as his opponent, but the thing is, he lands with intent. He has power. He lands at cleaner shots. He doesn't get hit as often. That's why he wins.
But if he has power, then why is he continuing to go to decision? I think his last like seven fights are all decision except for the ones he loses.
He's got a knockout.
Yeah, well, one of them. One in his last seven.
Okay, but I mean, guy's got some chins on him. I mean, it's not all just him.
I understand that.
He dragged Chisano. I mean, it wasn't even a contest.
Chisano.
And guess what? Trezano is a better striker than Julian Arosa.
All right.
He is. If you look at it statistically, right, statistically speaking, you know, Trezano is a much better defensive striker than Julian Arosa will ever be. The dude goes in there and goes in and tries to out-brawl and out-scrap his opponents. He did that against Steven Peters, and he out-scrapped him, right. But is he going to out-scrap Duadu? Absolutely not. There's no chance. There's no way. This is not he's at such a massive disadvantage on the feet. Just like I've told people in the Ismael Bonfim and Abasov fight last night, everybody's talking about Abasov and how he's going to knock out the credential professional boxing national champion over in Brazil. He's going to knock him out. And now we have the same thing here where people are thinking Julian Arosa is going to compete on the feet with a Muay Thai world champion against Duadu, who's outstruck every opponent that he's faced in the octagon thus far, other than Danny Henry in his UFC debut. He's outstruck everybody. And he was beating the dog shit out of Mostar Evloev in that third round, might I add, after getting taken down for two rounds.
All right. Well, if it goes to decision, I'm going to text you. So,
oh, if it goes to decision and he wins, I will text you right back.
But that's the thing. And I also, if it is a split, I think it's plus 700 for Duadu and then plus 1400 for Arosa. So, something like that.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not a bad sprinkle if you think it's going to be close, considering, you know.
But you don't.
No, I don't. I personally don't. I don't think it's going to be close. I think if Arosa comes out there thinking he's going to outstrike Duadu, he's got another thing coming. It's just not going to happen. He has to mix in takedowns. He has to control him on the mat. He cannot stand there, you know, and go toe-to-toe with Duadu and think he's going to kickbox for 15 minutes and win a fight. It's just not going to happen.
Well, I mean, you know what happened last time Arosa fought a boxer?
Who, Sean Woodson?
Yeah, your boy.
Yeah, but Duadu is a Muay Thai world champion. He doesn't just box. He's got hands and he's got legs. He's going to shatter the lead leg of your boy, Julian Arosa. So, therefore, his entire movement is gone. And then he's going to start firing some body kicks. He's going to start firing some head kicks. And then he's going to mix it up with the hands. I mean, this dude knows how to change levels with his striking and just chip you away. That's exactly what he did to Trezano, just chipping him away, landing the harder shots, because Arosa is going to have to start coming forward and he's going to be countering him every which way till Sunday. I'm telling you, man. I mean, this is Duadu's coming out party, and he even talked about it. Nobody wants to fight him, and rightfully so. He's a guy that's hard to beat. If you don't have elite grappling skills, you're gonna have a hard time trying to outstrike this man on the feet.
I'm gonna tell Julian you said that,
and mind you, I've had him on a podcast, so it's not like I don't like the guy. I just think this is a very bad matchup for him. I don't think it's gonna end well. I don't think him thinking he's gonna go out there and outstrike the Muay Thai world champion is gonna happen. I just don't believe it. I just can't see it.
To respond to Forrest, and then we'll move on. My pick is Duadu. I just think that Arosa is worth a sprinkle or a stab if it via decision. Because I don't see him finishing Duadu, but I do think there is a slight chance that he might get the nod if it goes a decision. That's it. I see Garrett rolling his eyes.
How many decisions has this man like even won in the last like 10 years? He's got one decision win in the last 5 years.
Well, Saturday might be two.
This man has one decision win in 10 fights in the last 5 years.
Hey, I was right about the submission by Dennis last week. So, I mean, don't at me.
All right. I'm just messing with you. Let's keep it moving. We're finally up to our main card. First fight up. It's going to be a banger in the light heavyweight division between Jan Kutalaba and Johnny Walker. Right now, Kutalaba minus 200 to come back on Walker, plus 170 all the way up to plus 185. Who do you got?
Yeah, you know, this you got me all tongue-tied after that last fight. This one has all the makings for either a badass fight or a complete shit show, you know, which it sucks because I want to be excited for it. You know, Kutalaba is obviously probably, I guess I should say, the more well-rounded fighter. But if he gets drawn into a firefight, which he does, it is very possible that Walker finds that KO. And the longer the fight goes, though, I think the more it benefits Kudalaba. So maybe you could bet him live after round one and hope. Oh, you like it the other way?
That's the other way. Yeah, 100%. Because you know Kudalaba always slows down after round one.
Yeah, but that's true. But I
always, always.
So does Walker.
No, but Walker's gone 25 minutes before.
Yeah, but that was against an old
guy.
And,
I mean, like, yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, like,
well, whoever you want to bet them after round one, because one of them probably is going to get knocked out in round one, and just bet against whoever had a decent round in round one. How about that? I personally think that Walker is going to have a decent round one, and Kudalaba is probably going to take over round two. You know, he's better in the clinch. He's good against the cage, but both guys have horrible fight IQ, and because of which, yeah, I think that Johnny Walker's the play. Like, as strange as that sounds, it's just like dogger pass, bro. Like, for real. And
I'm betting on Johnny Walker. I don't give a fuck. I mean, we look at it. Johnny Walker is a better striker. Kudalaba is a better wrestler. Johnny Walker has a better cardio. Kudalaba fades after round one. He's got 5 inches of height, 7 inches of reach on him as well. Not going to be easy to take him down or get in on him without eating a knee or an elbow or anything of the sort. And his stock is down after losing to Jamahal Hill and Thiago Santos.
This is the best guys in the
division. Yes, I know he lost to Krylov and he lost to Corey Anderson. Corey Anderson's going to be the Bellator champion. Krylov, he's a good wrestler, but he actually has cardio and he's actually, you know, can actually fight smart. But he just dogged Ryan Spann. Let's not forget that. And we're talking about a guy that just lost to Ryan Spann by fighting like an idiot. And then Kudalaba's only win was against Devin Clark. That's his only win. And then he lost, you know, he lost to Akhalayev twice. He had a draw against Jacoby. I mean, I'm not high on Kudalaba because if he doesn't get the KO in round one, he's absolutely a dud. Every fight that's gone after round one, other than Jonathan Wilson, he has lost. Lost against Misha Cherkunov, Jared Cannonier, Glover Teixeira, and Dustin Jacoby, he should have lost. And he actually, the only win he had after round one was against Devin Clark. And he couldn't even put him away. He had to go to decision against him. And he had to take him down 8 times.
Which Devin Clark, yeah.
Like, you're not finishing Devin Clark. You're not finishing Johnny Walker. I'm sorry. Yes, I know Johnny Walker got finished, you know, in two of his last four fights. No, two of his last five fights. But Corey Anderson, he's still got some deceptive power. And then, you know, Jamahal Hill, he's a powerful puncher. You know, Jamahal Hill would fuck up Kudalaba. Let's be honest. He would fuck him up. So I'm taking a shot on Johnny Walker here. I don't think Kudalaba should be minus 200. I don't know why he's minus 200. I mean, what's his best win anyways? Devin Clark. His best win is Devin Clark. And anybody that's he's fought that was even remotely better, he's lost to.
Yeah. You know, I don't disagree with Forrest thinking that Kudalaba is the safer bet. The issue is that his IQ and his, like Garrett said, his adrenaline dump.
He's gonna go balls out against Walker because Walker is gonna go balls out with him. The reason why he was able to go 15 minutes with Devin Clark is because Devin Clark doesn't push a pace, he doesn't have a ton of power, he's not explosive, he's not as powerful either. You know, he's a slow plodding guy. Yes, he went 15 minutes against Justin Jacoby, but he also was getting fucked up after round one and absolutely had a major cardio dump after round one against Jacoby, and then Jacoby was fucking him up from then on. And I kind of see the same. I think Walker catches him in something, a flying knee, an elbow, a spinning back elbow, something. And also, he's the biggest tallest, lankiest guy that Kutalaba has had to deal with next to Magomed Ankalaev, who knocked his ass out twice.
Forrest, if you are still betting Kutalaba, though, I would take him in round one. I would take him by KO round one.
And Forrest, you don't need to change your pick. You know, yeah. You know, we're just here to help advise people here. We're not saying, oh, change your pick. If you got a strong stance the other way, please fade us. That's just the name of the game. We're not saying, you know, don't go and switch gears just because of what we said. If you have a viable reason why you're picking Kutalaba, fade Johnny Walker and us. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all we ask.
And then you could rub it in our face.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're here for.
Just like I will with the Arosa fight.
Yeah, hey, when Arosa just eats a left hook and goes night-night, right? Or yeah, a head kick.
Your camera is a little like, fuzzy, out right? of focus, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with it right now. But let me see. I'm going to try to...
It's just a risky fight, like, because, I mean, they both... Like, it really comes down to IQ, really. So... Pick one, hope for the best. And it just seems like more fun to, you know, side with the dog.
Yeah, I know what's going on with this thing right now.
It's not really that bad. I just wanted to bring it to your attention if you didn't see it.
Yeah, no, I saw it, but it's being a pain in the dick.
Isn't Walker...
Oh, that's a lot better.
Yeah, hasn't he been training with Hazmat as well?
While he's been at the UFCPI, yeah. I mean, but he's been primarily over at SBG Ireland.
Probably just taking pictures together.
Yeah, pretty much. But they were getting in a little bit of work. But all right, let's keep it moving. We got four more fights to break down. We got a fight in the women's bantamweight division between Irene Aldana and Macy Shazan. Right now, Aldana -175 all the way up to -186 to come back on Shazan, +150 all the way up to +155. What do you got?
Yeah, this one has split decision written all over it. Macy has the reach and the height, and Aldana has the power, or at the very least, she has her and her corner that make noises every time she connects or like almost connects. This one's going to come down to what the judges favor. And as far as winning the fight, you know, I think it's really going to be who mixes it up better. I could see Macy doing what she did against Dumont and taking the decision, but I could also see Aldana connecting heavily, but not finishing Macy. Again, it really comes down to what the judges favor. I like Macy Chaizon by decision, +300, win or not. I think that that has a lot of value on it. And I think that she's the one that's going to win.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, Aldana, this is the longest layoff in her UFC career. It's about, what was it, July last year is when she last fought. So it's about, you know, 14 months. It's pretty
July
long.
July 10th.
All right.
I got the poster.
It was a little long of a layoff. You know, she looked good. She knocked out Yana Kunzakaya, who's now not fighting because she's a mother. So, you know, that's here nor there. At least Shazan has been active. You know, she's won four of her last five. She beat Norma Dumont in her last fight via split decision at 145. Aldana definitely has a striking advantage, the technical advantage, the power advantage. Shazan's bigger, stronger, better grappler, better wrestler. Shazan has 11 takedowns in her last four fights. And I think that's going to be the route that she goes. She does well at keeping distance because she's big, she's long, she uses her kicks well, she uses her jab well. But when she gets in range, she tends to get hit. So I'm hoping Shazan comes in there and gets to work on the grappling up against the fence, where I know Aldana has been taken down and controlled like she did against Holly Holm not too long ago. Holly Holm had was ragdolling her and just completely controlling her. I think Shazan can do the same here. So I wouldn't really be looking to bet Aldana at this price at -175 or even -185. I would take the shot on Shazan. I do like the decision prop as well, but she can also finish her on the mat. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I think decision prop is the way to go. I think Aldana's tough enough to hang in there, even if she gets taken down.
Yeah, I mean, she has the fighting spirit. My worry is that she would get subbed. But yeah, I think that the decision is the play.
All right, moving on. We got a fight in a catch weight of 180 pounds between Kevin Holland and Daniel D-Rod Rodriguez. Right now, Holland minus 195 all the way up to minus 220 to come back on D-Rod Rodriguez. Plus 165 all the way up to plus 175. What do you got?
Yeah. This is a fun fight. You know, it's first of all, it's hard to believe that D-Rod is 35. He looks pretty young, and that guy is a hell of a boxer. The only thing that makes me think he'll have some issues is Holland's reach. However, D-Rod didn't really have any issues with Grant's reach, but that was Dwight Grant. While both guys aren't exactly threats on the ground, Holland is trying to evolve his game there. I'm sure you guys know. So I don't think that that comes into play. And this should be an entirely stand-up affair. The extra weight should help D-Rod, who is naturally larger than Holland, especially considering he has added or attempted to add that BJJ wrinkle. And also, most of D-Rod's recent wins are over guys that aren't in the UFC, and he didn't finish them. So I think that Kevin Holland wins by decision, but I'm really not content with picking him just because the odds are kind of, I mean, they're really heavy, or chalky, I guess, you know, as you better say. I do like the decision play, which I think that they just box for 15 minutes.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I think Kevin Holland gets it done. I think he's going to pose a lot of troubles for Daniel Rodriguez just because he's bigger, longer. He's got a 7-inch reach advantage, something crazy like that. And then Holland's he's crafty on the feet. He's very slick. He's hard to hit and he can mix things up and take you down too. But ultimately I just think, you know, it's going to be a fun fight because they're going to go out there. They're going to throw hands, but I think D-Rod's tough enough to hang in there. I think it's going to go over on the rounds, which is that set at 2.5? You know, 2.5 is at minus 115 or plus 102. If you got over 1.5, I think that's perfect. At minus 186, I think that's a steal. I think this fight goes the distance. On Bet Online, it's plus 150, which is a great price there. Holland by decision is plus 200 all the way up to plus 300. That's not bad either. Ultimately, I like this fight. I think it's going to be fireworks. I think they're going to go back and forth. D-Rod's got a hell of a chin. Kevin Holland's got a hell of a chin. I expect this to be just an all-out war for 15 minutes where I ultimately think Kevin Holland gets the job done. He gets his hand raised in the end.
Yeah, simple as that.
Simple. Easy peasy. All right, in our co-main event, we got a fight between Li Jingliang and Tony Ferguson. Right now, Jingliang minus 305 all the way up to minus 333 to come back on Tony Ferguson plus 255 to plus 265. Who do you got?
I'll make this one quick. You know, while this is a winnable fight for Tony, we'll probably just see more of the same. Justin Gaethje changes a man, and as a fan, it sucks to see Tony do this to himself. While I do like the idea of Tony winning a close decision and retiring, the fact of the matter is that even if he does somehow win, he won't retire. Tony is the type of guy that dies on his shield and then has sex with it. I like Jingliang via KO, and I think that he gets it done in the second.
I agree with that. This is not the right move for him. He's old now. He's 38 years old. He's shot worn. He's been in a ton of wars. He's now up at 170 pounds. Doesn't look like he's in the best shape of his life either. Jingliang is coming off a very good knockout against Muslim Salikov. He's got a ton of power. He's got the grappling chops. He's still only 34 years old. He's facing elite competition in the welterweight division. Guys are much bigger, much more powerful than Tony Ferguson. I think this is just going to be Jingliang just steamrolling Tony and getting him out of there early, maybe in the first round, honestly.
Yeah, I kind of went back and forth. I hope that Tony like keeps his distance, and I don't know.
I think it's just going to run into just like a booming right hand, and then that's all she wrote.
Yeah, it sucks.
All right, now we're up to our main event. in the welterweight division between Hamzat Chimaev and Nate Diaz. Right now, I believe the line set at minus 1,000 Hamzat Chimaev in the comeback on Nathan Diaz plus 700. Do I dare say who do you got?
Yeah, I don't see this one going any other way other than Diaz getting murdered. You know, sure, he's fun and marketable, but Dana knows exactly what he's doing by putting Nate up against arguably the biggest killer in the welterweight division, let alone probably the UFC. This fight is a passing of the baton, ultimately. Connor made Diaz a name among the casuals, and Diaz will do exactly the same for Chimaev. All over again, history repeats itself. Initially, I was thinking Chimaev via TKO, but I think Chimaev will get off. I think he will literally jerk off on making Diaz say he is done. So because of how twisted this man is, I have Chimaev winning by sub early, maybe round one, probably round two. He subs the man, makes him tap, makes him, yeah, it's going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, we got Forrest Daniels chiming in. He's like, if Nate wins, he will live stream himself running naked around his neighborhood. We will hold you to that, Forrest Daniels. We will hold you to that.
Screenshot.
But yeah, this matchup is just, it's tailor-made for Hamzat to win, obviously. I mean, put it this way, no one wants to fight Hamzat. Even Colby doesn't want to fight Hamzat. Jorge Masvidal doesn't want to fight Hamzat. So are their next best option, they're like, Nate Diaz, fuck it. I mean, you want to fight? This is your fight. Here's your last fight on your contract. So, and it's, there's really not much to say here other than I'm expecting Hamzat to do whatever the fuck he wants, knock him out on the feet or take him down and beat his ass there. Whatever he wants, he will do. Because he's better than Nate Diaz in every single aspect of MMA. From the striking, to the grappling, to the jiu-jitsu, to everything. He's going to absolutely obliterate him. And it sucks because I'm a fan of Nate Diaz. I don't want to see him go out like that. I'd much rather have seen him fight somebody, a fun fight, against literally anybody at 155, at 170. Not this fight. Even Nate Diaz didn't want this fight. He's like, I never called for this fight. This is the only guy that they gave to me, and that's that. So, you know, it sucks to see him go out this way, but ultimately, Hamzat Chimaev gets it done inside probably 2 to 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even going to be a competitive main event. We're going to get to the main event, and everybody's going to be like, oh, I'm so ready for this. I'm so ready for this. And then, oh, it's over already? Man, that fucking sucked.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of like shades of the Nick Diaz fight where he kind of just like gave up. I remember when they announced this fight or when they were talking about it, and I thought it was fake. Like, why is this a thing? You know, like, right. It's just, this isn't why I watch fights. You know what I'm saying? Like, I watch them because I like to see different styles. You know, I like to see competition. Like, I like, you know, blood sport, you know, that type of stuff. This is like shooting fish in a barrel. Like, this is weird.
Yeah, this sucks for Nate Diaz. Let's just put it that way. This sucks. But at least we get Nate Diaz back.
For 3 minutes. I mean, hey, at least with Tony, there is a chance that Tony wins, right?
Right.
There is a very slim chance. This. What? Yeah, bro. Like, better start praying, bro.
Yep. Pretty much. All right, guys. That's what we got for you guys for this week's KO Breakdown. UFC 279 on tap this Saturday night on ESPN Plus. But we need you guys to go to prizepicks.com, sign up, use promo code PROPSLIVE for 100% deposit up to $100 and win some money. Easy over-unders over there. UFC 279, they got a ton of props, a ton of money to be made. Just go there, deposit, make some money, and we'll cash out this weekend with our man over there. Yeah, there. Where can What's everybody up? Find you?
You can find me at GarrettTheKerman.com. You know, what do we do? We sell. Never mind. I'll prepare something next time because I was about to get very vulgar. This is a PG show. I gotta keep it clean for Mr. Forrest Daniels. Spend your money wisely. Bankroll. You know, be a man. And you know, send me those screenshots of all your big bets because Daddy needs someone to tail. That's all I got. See you next week.
All right, guys. Don't forget. Head over to Props HQ on YouTube as well as all social platforms and Playmaker as well. Give them a like, give them a follow, subscribe, and we'll see you all next week. We are out of here. Adios.
Send me your Halloween stuff. Love you. Bye. Fat fingers.
We're still on. Why are we still on? Bye.